Next week, we're in Yerushalayim at the Jerusalem Marathons. We will not have an official weekly update. But 2 weeks from now, we are hoping that Malcolm will join us during our own fundraising marathon. And in addition to encouraging people to contribute, he'll obviously update us on what is happening in this amazing world of ours as well. And speaking of which, Malcolm Honlein is Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations and joins us for the weekly update here on a Friday Erev Shabbos. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to JM in the AM.
Oh, thank you.
The Prime Minister's eating a lot of ice cream these days, huh?
It was only budgeted. They didn't say they actually ate it. It was only 10,000 shekels in the budget for the ice cream store next door.
I mean, who I hear, by the way, are doing very well since then.
It's become a hotspot attraction in Jerusalem now.
Part of the Netanyahu.
It's cold, but it's like
the Netanyahu reality tour, I'll tell you. But, I mean, you know, I don't know. I know that if I really didn't like the man, I probably would have loved the article, but I just thought it was so silly that this time, and I didn't think it was a lot of money. I didn't think it was that big of an ice cream budget, I hate to tell you.
Well, $2,700 at a time of austerity when they're cutting the budget just looms large. It's like so many things, even with the president, with others, that, you know, it seems out of keeping and out of place. But again, it's not money expended. It just said that this was budgeted, and I guess for their entertainment, when they have guests and stuff, they can run next door and get them an ice cream cone.
Yeah, come on! If I was prime minister, you know what I'd be serving if I was prime minister?
I don't want to know.
I'd be way over budget, way over budget.
You know what? Can you imagine a world leader there? They say one scoop or two.
By the way, the president is visiting next month. Do we know what his favorite flavor is? I hope. I hope somebody's looked into this.
I'm sure they did, and they will find out.
And someone told me there was a change in position in terms of Jewish liaison to the White House. Better let the new guy know that the you know, favorite ice cream of the president is now a top priority.
I'm sure that has been in the diplomatic exchanges.
Yeah, if you say so. Have you been given any advanced information regarding his trip next month? Do we know anything more now than when it was originally announced that the president of the United States is traveling to Jerusalem?
Well, they've released a lot of details about the proposed schedule. It's not been finalized, but it looks like he may speak at the Knesset or he may not, that he will probably do a speech at the Israel Museum. When I was in Israel earlier this week, you know, I saw the preparations, and as I said, it's really interesting because people keep asking, why is he coming now? Why is he coming? Every reporter.
Right.
I said, for 4 years, he kept yelling, why hasn't he come? He finally comes, and then you want to know, why is he coming now? Maybe because everybody was screaming and yelling about him coming. And it's become an obsession. You know, they had this competition online for the logo for the trip, a blend of the Israeli and American flags. And then they talk about it everywhere, the buzz, and people who are advocating, including some who are, you know, usually, as usual, off the wall. But I think it's very important, and I said this, and obviously those who wanted to misuse it, that it's important that for the perception in the United States that we do in the right way, that you don't want Americans, even if they don't support the president, the particular president, don't want to see him disrespected abroad.
Right.
And it's very important that the message be of the unity of the United States that goes, and especially in security military areas, that goes to Iran, that goes to the other countries in the region, that they see, you know, the Iron Dome is going to, I guess, is going to visit, and other symbols, and, you know, I think he will try to, number one, put a better face on the relationship. I know the Prime Minister, whom I spoke a long time about the visit, is very committed to making it a success and trying to avoid circumstances where, you know, an individual, unfortunate or otherwise, even with legitimate gripes, doesn't become the story as opposed to the visit. And I know I was there with Clinton several times, with President Bush, and, you know, it really can be a solidifier of the relationship, and the numbers always go up afterwards, and there's genuine feeling on the part of people. Now, I think with President Obama, he doesn't enjoy the numbers, the popularity that those presidents did. But I think people generally want it to be a success.
Also, the press can take a misstep and make such a big deal about it. And another thing, the press can create a misstep, as we saw You know, they can create something that really didn't. If those who are behind the scenes will tell you never existed.
I know one expert said to me he hopes that there are no public statements on Iran, because any grimace, any, you know, something getting into the eye of one or the other will be interpreted in a thousand different ways, that they're not on the same page, they are on the same page, you know, that, and for the Iranians, it's probably better to keep them guessing about what is being planned, and the message, and it has to be backed by substance, is that the alternatives are on the, are really on the, options are really there on the table but exist. And why I was critical of the fact that the aircraft carrier was taken out of the Persian Gulf, because it's how does Tehran interpret it? Do they see this as a sign of weakness and backing off of the military commitment, even if there are legitimate budgetary concerns and concerns that if they don't do this, then they won't have it when they need it?
Right.
And all the other reasons, you have to think of the perception. And everything that happens, as you just said, or how it's perceived, will be important.
And we'll talk about Iran in a moment. Obviously, I need to get your opinion regarding yesterday's UN report. But there's no way. Well, I shouldn't say there's no way. It's not possible. Would you agree it's not possible that the President of the United States, as he tours the Iron Dome facilities, is going to make a challenge to the Prime Minister of how are you utilizing United States machinery and technology to defend your citizens while at the same time building settlements? He wouldn't do what certain reporters do in these forums, would he?
I don't think that's going to be the case. I'm sure that all these issues will be discussed when they meet privately. But again, I don't think that that's going to be central. I think that they really want to make this a start of the both new administrations. Hopefully Israel will have one by then, and be able to say, you know, that what is really reality is that overall U.S.-Israel relations, the importance of both countries, as Vice President Biden said to us recently, you know, it's our aircraft carrier there. It's if we didn't have it, we'd have to create it. And the importance of Israel to the United States, not just the United States to Israel, but showing an Iron Dome is a symbol of what happens when they work together, that both countries' security is enhanced, as will others be by the technology that's developed. I know that a very important issue, and one we've been working very hard on, is about Jonathan Pollard, and I'm sure he will get a strong message from the Prime Minister and from people. But again, you don't want to make Pollard the enemy. You want to make him understand how sincerely and how strongly people feel about this issue. And, you know, when you have these nutcases who organize a letter to me rather than to the President, when we've been working and meeting with the White House on this on a regular basis, and you know, he fainted in prison. He's coming close to his 10,000th day in prison.
Beginning of April, I believe. Yeah.
And right, exactly. And it's really imperative. And more people have been mobilized who were previously opposed, who were involved in the case at the time. And again, I spoke to the White House last night about it. You know, people are saying he should bring him on his plane. You know, and
That would be quite a gesture, huh?
That would be certainly a remarkable gesture.
It's we have not heard. I mean, and I'm not saying this in any way as you know. I'm not saying this in a negative way. I'm saying this in a positive way. I don't think this audience has heard you as hopeful and as enthusiastic about a possible resolution for a Pollard release like you are now.
I did not say that. I wish I could say that I'm convinced he's going to get out. I know that.
Right, but it sounds like you think it's the best shot ever.
I think that the 10,000th day is really a watershed, just as each year was a watershed. You know, and I visited him in prison. We've appealed to every president on this. We've carried out campaigns on it, and there's still some resistance in quarters about it, but it's largely dissipated. You know, it's not exactly a popular issue in the American people per se, but there is broader and broader support for it. And at some point, they've got to come to the recognition. There's still opposition, as I said, within government circles, within some of those who will have to approve it. But I just think that the humanitarian case and Pollard's physical condition, all of the things combined, you know, that, that there's got to be some point where this injustice ends. And today, he has said everything that was asked of him. He's done everything that was asked of him to do. He doesn't want to become a campaigner afterwards. He wants to go and live his life with his wife. And it's just outrageous that such a disproportionate sentence. And we have worked with people, and people around the world have expressed themselves on it and been involved. And in Israel, you see signs in many places that there is real feeling, and I hope the president will see it, and it'll be done in a way that really encourages him to release him.
Back to my original question, do you think CBS heard from anybody who opposed the way their reporter linked Iron Dome and settlements?
I would certainly hope so. I wasn't here when it happened. I only read about it yesterday, actually. And the whole way, and a lot of it is ignorance, a lot of it is intentional. You know, Mark Twain, I saw a great quote from him that he wrote once saying, if you don't read a paper, you're uninformed. If you read the newspaper, you're misinformed.
Very good.
And that's really the circumstance today. We look at the coverage, and, you know, having spending 9 days in Israel and meeting with everybody, and you see the reality. We took a tour with the mayor of Jerusalem, the first time he's ever done this, but it was so remarkable. And he really invested a lot of thought, a lot of work into this trip. We took the whole conference, over 100 people, and we visited first a site over Silwan, where you can see the whole panorama, and you see the reality on the ground, and then talked about the history, how this was Jewish owned, etc. Then to an area over E1, and then to Ramat Shlomo and the other areas where, quote, settlements inside Jerusalem are being built, from Gilot and Ramat Shlomo and all these areas. And I have to tell you that, of course, there are people with varied views, but there's nobody who can go away from that. It doesn't necessarily convert their positions on the part of some, but I think that the vast majority walked away and said, you know, it's so different than everything they imagine. And until you see it, no matter how engaged you are, it just changes your perception of it. I went with a map to the UN one day while they were debating E1 and everybody was condemning E1, and I asked several people, could you show me on a map where that is? It could be in New Jersey. They have no clue. And frankly, most of the people in the audience don't know that it's a barren piece of land. And from the questions that were asked, it was clear people said, well, what about the contiguity? And we said, you know, this is not an issue. You put roads, you can put bypasses, everything can be done. That all the arguments really don't hold. But it's a critical land bridge between Jerusalem and Maale Adumim.
Yep.
In the wrong hands, it could become a very dangerous place.
No question about it. Well, I saw Senator Rubio called Yerushalayim the capital of Israel. That was a bold statement.
That was true, and while I was there, we met senators and congressmen and everybody, you know, people. I think there are four or five congressional delegations this week alone in Israel.
Wow, what's going on? A lot of movement between Washington and Jerusalem. Oh, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Spring break into Yerushalayim.
Well, we also have an organization called the Council for Secure America, which is the leaders of the oil and gas industry, and they went to Israel. And you know what? You have to see it again through their eyes each time the things that we take for granted, when you see it from people who've seen it for the first time, and they talk about how it changed their lives, how it, you know, impacted them, and seeing the truth. And that's what I tell all the audiences. Just look at the truth. Israel, with all its flaws, there's no place comparable to it. And you look at all the charges that have been made against Israel and continue to be made. And there's a report that came out from Human Rights Watch this week criticizing Israel over, you know, the conduct of its military operation in Gaza. Now, here, 160 people were killed. Even by Human Rights Watch, 115 or so of them were combatants. So you're talking about 1,000 sorties in which 45 or so, or less than 50 civilians are killed when the rockets are placed in civilian populations and fired from civilian populations at an innocent civilian population. And you see the distortion. It's so blatant that they can come out with a report like this, and they buy right into the Hamas line, a terrorist organization that seeks to kill civilians. Here you have an Air Force that does everything possible, and an army that doesn't invade in order to avoid casualties on the other side, and yet they get slammed no matter what.
Unbelievable. Those trips, by the way, that you just mentioned, it's like birthright for business people, huh? That's what it is. America.
You know, we want energy independence for the United States. These are people helping making it happen with fracking and all sorts of independent development of energy. And America is rapidly moving towards energy independence. This frees us up from foreign dependence and the influence in many respects. But at the same time, Israel's oil and gas industry is growing, and there may be opportunities for joint ventures to help make Israel energy independent as quickly as possible.
What a different world. What a different world just a few years ago. It's unbelievable. America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listeners-sponsored WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, now in Rockland County at 91.9 on the FM dial, around the world on the web, jmam.org. Reminder, next week we're at the Jerusalem Marathon in Yerushalayim, and hopefully, Malcolm will join us 2 weeks from today. Hopefully he'll be live in studio, and he'll not only give us an update, but he'll encourage everybody to support our own marathon as we get ready for our 30th anniversary celebration, a two-week celebration. That's right. One day is insufficient. A two-week celebration here to celebrate JM and the AM's 30th year. Amcha has called for a demonstration on Shushan Purim this coming Monday at noon at the Argentinian Consulate General. That's at 12 West 56th Street in Manhattan. I remind our listeners that on 56th Street in Manhattan at noon on Monday, that's when the rally, the protest will take place. The Argentinian government is plowing ahead with plans for its parliament to ratify an agreement its foreign minister signed with Iran to establish a truth commission to investigate the 1994 Amia Jewish communal building bombing in Buenos Aires. You've told us about the relationship between Argentina and Iran. What do you think of the truth commission that they are forming together?
Well, I spoke about this several weeks ago, and I think it may be well voted on today. And the president, Kushner, has gotten behind it. The foreign minister, Timmerman, whose father was saved by Israel when he was being persecuted and prosecuted by the Argentinian government, says he doesn't owe anybody a blank thing, and he used very harsh and terrible language, and has been very critical of Israel. And Argentina, which is having its own economic problems, bad relations with Brazil, Uruguay, other neighbors, is now reaching out, and I think that Iran is seeing this as a backup to Venezuela, as its main outpost in South America, where it invests a huge amount of money. And there were reports that Kushner got paid off for her election campaign with funds from Iran, the Chavez directly. If you remember, there was reports of suitcases of money going to them, and all sorts of allegations. But clearly here, there's got to be something more to this, because for 20 years, Argentina has pursued the charges through the Interpol and the indictments against five people, Iranians, for their involvement, not only in the Amia, but in the 1992 bombing of the Israeli embassy, which together they took, I don't know, 130 lives, 120 lives, and many, many injured. The people were known. These were leaders of Iran. Iran wants this truth commission, which is a sham, and which will clearly exonerate all those they want to see exonerated, because they want two of the people who are named in those indictments to be removed from the list so they can run for president in the June elections.
Wow.
And they know that this is a shadow over them and would limit their ability to travel to many places, etc. So Iran has its own agenda in addition to wanting to use this to build better relations, and I'm sure benefit Argentina with the funds as they have others to achieve their ends. But it is everybody should understand, it's not going to be a truth commission, it's a whitewash. And after all these years, the demand should have been for turn over those. Let them stand trial. If they want a real truth commission, let them put them before a judge and try them. And then see if they're innocent, then they'll be declared so.
Wow, unbelievable. Yeah, truth commission. Before we talk about the report on Iran, just in terms of the Israeli government, first of all, you were just in Israel for a stretch of time. Do you get a feeling about the trouble Lieberman is or isn't in? Like, is it looking more like this is going to pass, or is it looking more like he'll be convicted? Any feelings on that?
Yes.
What do you got on that?
It's impossible to know. It's impossible to know, because every day you see different headlines, and newspapers all have agendas of their own. Some who like him, some who don't like him, some who want to see him in, some who want to see him out. And the only time we'll know is when, and remember that he has been for years investigated, and now it's down to, you know, relatively minor charges compared to what they had originally suggested. This is about the appointment of an ambassador who they claim gave him information about some investigation of him, And he appointed him then as ambassador to Belarus, and the former deputy foreign minister has testified that he tried to interfere, that Clinton didn't interfere. It could well end up nothing. They're going to hold the foreign ministry for him for a while. They may appoint somebody in the interim until this is over, because I think it's not till April when we'll have the next hearings, and so likely not May, till May, June, when we'll have a finding from the judges. So he'll be on ice till then in terms of getting the ministry. This complicates the situation for the prime minister, who anyway faces a very complicated situation.
Well, it's hard to keep up with who's talking to who and who doesn't want to be in whose coalition, and if this person dares come into the government. I mean, it's impossible.
You got it right.
And I thought that it was ridiculous when they said he wouldn't have a government by the time Obama arrives. Now I'm starting to think, hey, you know, this may go down to the wire.
Well, it can go beyond the wire, too. It could trip the wire. There are two deadlines. One, I think, is March 2nd, when the first period, you know, the 30 days, I think, and then I think you can get an extension for 18 days till March 20th, which the president can grant to give him more time to form a government. Or they could turn, and if Lapid and Bayet Yehudi and Bennett would come together, they
right.
would also have 31 seats.
Right. But my prediction as of last night is, and now I see it, that somebody who told me this months ago about Netanyahu's desperation to make sure that this government lasts for 4 years, because the last time he's going to run. He's not running again for prime minister, you have to figure, right?
Probably.
That's why Yakimovich and others like her are going to be part of this government, because he is now in this mode that he has to make this as broad a coalition as possible to hopefully secure his stand for the next 3-4 years.
He would like it. And frankly, if he had run earlier when people told him to, you know, at the beginning of last year, he would have walked away with this election. And, you know, getting the timing right is half the game, and he did not. And there's a new poll out, which I don't know if you've seen, that shows him getting 20 seats if an election was held now.
Wow.
And 30 seats.
Wow.
Now, this is going to put the pressure that you're talking about on him, not so much to get a four-year government, because there's a lot of talk that this government will be cobbled together and not last more than a year and a half. People are tired of elections, but there are some who think he may not have a government and they will have to go to elections even now again. And remember that 81 members of the Knesset named him to be the prime minister. So there isn't somebody else who's waiting in line to be prime minister.
Right.
Or except Tzipi Livni.
Despite all their declarations.
but Tzipi Livni did, but many say that she won't have a party in the next election. And it could be boiled down to Bennett on the right and Lapid towards the center left and a few other, and the religious parties, of course. So I think right now it's honestly unpredictable. I think in the end they will get a government. Bibi will have to, as you said, act with some desperation in terms of promising all of the portfolios, which means Likud ministers could well be left out in the cold. There's a lot of pressure to have a smaller government, but this will require him to have a bigger government, meaning more ministers, and it could be very cumbersome, and he has to pass a budget. If you don't pass a budget
right.
within a set period in the spring, the government automatically falls. So there are a lot of pressures and a lot of the issues, and you see the statements. We had the heads of all the parties, Bennett, Lapid, Rabbi Parish for the religious parties, Buji Herzog, and Tzipi Livni. All of them came and spoke during the conference.
Somebody's new
prime minister.
It's possible that some of these new members of Knesset are going to end up being members for just a few months if they really go to elections again.
And that is one of the reasons why there may not be elections, because you have, I think, around 50 new members.
Right.
And then how can he give it up and risk going to an election and their whole careers having been a flash? And even on their CV, it's not going to be able to...
Right. I mean, even the Likud list. I mean, just, you know, if the polls are right, imagine, you know, how many people just on Likud would be without a Knesset position.
Right. So it's really not in anybody's interest. And with the president coming, I mean, if they don't have a government, I don't see how the president goes. That was one of the reasons why Kerry didn't go, although I think it was more that they didn't want to upstage the president, and they want to keep the president to bring the focus on Israel, and he's making a tour of other countries in the region and in Europe. But the thought that the president would have to postpone his visit because there isn't a government, or that Israel will have to go through another wrenching election, which only becomes more divisive and more divisive, rather than seeking a way, and there are efforts to find compromise on some of the key issues, but they're very sensitive, very serious issues, including the conscription issues and other issues that are deeply held views.
Well, you know, it's either going to be the inability to form a government or the vendors in Machane Yehuda. One of them is going to postpone the trip of President Obama.
And when you think about it, when you have the issues right now, the developments that we've seen in Syria, in Lebanon, in Iran, in Egypt, really serious developments. Egypt is being in deep trouble economically. The corruption, he's doing nothing about the economy. And reports that North Korea is upgrading the Egyptian missile sites. And there are Chinese and North Korean experts there. We see that they have taken some steps, flooding a couple hundred tunnels, because it's destabilizing Sinai and Egypt, not because of Israel, even though it's part of the agreement with in the Hamas ceasefire agreement. But they have uncovered hundreds of tunnels that are functioning. And Egypt's instability...
He called for new elections, and that's going to lead to more stability or not?
No, that is likely to be very contentious. You have millions of people in the street in Egypt protesting his grab of power, and you see that he is every opportunity where he could introduce reforms or try to take power, he takes more power, and that has built more resentment. And the danger is that you could get a Salafist, somebody even more extreme than he. That's always the clarion call that, you know, he's better than the alternatives. We always hear that regarding Abbas, but at some point, you know, that's no longer going to be a valid argument.
Tell me about the UN report yesterday on Iran.
Well, the UN report is something that, in fact, we talked about, I think, 2 weeks ago, about these new centrifuges that are operating and the story about the magnets, which indicated they're more and more sophisticated, all of which means that they can enrich faster to a higher degree. And degree matters because that you get to be weapons grade. The Iranians are putting out reports about health crises, which are not true because there are no sanctions against food and medication, but people rally to it. And yet you have a report like this where the evidence from the IEA, it's not coming from Israel or the U.S., and at the same time we see Iran becoming more and more aggressive, something I've talked about a lot, but you just have to look at what they're doing. Taking Alawite officers out of Syria and telling them to go to Lebanon because they're trying to take, they want to consolidate the hold on Lebanon and create an Alawite section along the Lebanese border inside Syria to which everybody could flee. And they would, and that would include the port of Latakia because that's their supply route to Hezbollah. We see them taking more aggressive stance internationally and their activities in Latin America, etc. The activities in Iraq where they've built another Hezbollah called the Ali al-Haq group, which is active now inside Syria. It's the League of the Righteous is the translation. And their leaders are coming back from exile in Iran. They're becoming more and more active, setting up social service networks, the whole traditional way Muslim Brotherhood or these Islamist groups, you know, aiding widows, doing all sorts of activities to establish themselves. And Maliki, the prime minister, is helping them because he is... pro-Iranian, and many say, you know, their guy in the capital. So you have, and then if you look just in 1 week at Hezbollah reports, in fact, in the 24-hour period that you had arrests in Nigeria of guys who were going to carry out attacks against American, Jewish, and Israeli targets, in Cyprus, where you have a suspect admitting his Hezbollah ties and that he had collected information on Israeli tourists and about American sites and et cetera. You have it in Bahrain, where they're talking about how Iran, they found this huge Hezbollah cell and how Iran is providing money and backing and activities on their behalf. And unfortunately, in Bulgaria, the government fell. But they had taken this very courageous stand, and Europeans couldn't get the courage up yet to declare Hezbollah a terrorist organization, telling us this myth that there's a political wing and a military wing. I mean, it's both same, just other sides of the same coin. And the Iran reads this as a license to become just more and more aggressive. And we see Hezbollah more aggressive. We see the activities throughout the region, whether from Yemen to Morocco. The instability in Jordan, which is, I keep repeating, is really critical for Israel. And people you know, Jordan is usually a country that is shunted aside.
Yep.
It's really important. And the recognition, increasing recognition of others about the danger, you hear it from the Gulf, you hear it from people, and most of all we see it played out in Syria, where they are becoming more involved in trying to assure that whatever the outcome in Syria, they will have a critical role there.
And the violence there continues to escalate, and the President of the United States will have an opportunity to make some bold statements next month in the Middle East. Will he? We don't know. But he, if he doesn't, he will have missed a great opportunity.
Well, I think that will be the public speech he gives. I think I mentioned at the Israel Museum, they're talking about 1,000 people, a couple other opportunities, that public opportunities. And, you know, that is the president's strong point. He's very good at connecting with audiences and going out and speaking about it. But it's important that the message be clear and credible. And that means that we have to back some of these things up with action. And because people look at Syria, people in the region, they see that the West, all of the West, has been completely impotent in dealing with it. You can have a situation in Bahrain where our 5th Fleet is based. And now the answer to the actions of the Iranians backing elements against the ruling regime, which is now divided amongst itself, is to get them to move the 5th Fleet headquarters out of there, rather than saying you're going to stay and fight and back the group and not let Iran. A victory there will mean ultimately a victory in Saudi Arabia, because it's 14 miles across a waterway to the eastern province where Saudi Arabia's oil is, and where you have a Shiite, very significant Shiite population infiltrated by Iran. And you see the jihadists being able to come from all over, from Libya, Egypt, Yemen, Algeria, and others into Syria. And we believe that they could well be targeting Jordan, Lebanon, Iraq, and of course Israel.
Right. All right, Malcolm, we have a minute. I don't want to go by without reminding everybody that although we see in 2013 countries, specifically one in the Persian Gulf area, who have made a public commitment have expressed their desire to eliminate the Jewish people. It's not the first time in Persia that has happened, correct? Not the first time in history that part of the world has had a madman who wants to destroy Jews.
Well, I don't think that you could have a more dramatic message. You know, there's a halacha that if you read the Megillah as an historic document, you're not Yotze with reading the Megillah. You have to read it in its contemporary significance. And by the way, I just want to mention, I'm doing a debate on February 26th, a discussion under the auspices of Jewish Week at Sutton Place Synagogue on February 26th at 7:30 for people who are interested in hearing more on this subject. It's with Yehuda Kurtzer, who's president of the Hartman Institute.
Oh, that should be interesting.
Special relationship. So I
that should be interesting.
Well, fine. Yes.
I better load you up with some zingers for that night.
I will welcome them and thank all the people who send emails on power, but send them to the president and write them. But the important message is that you see the origins of what delegitimization, what it really means. When Haman says, here's the guy with all the power in the world, everything he could want, and what does he say? Calls it a shoveli. It's not worth anything to me because you have one Jew standing against me. One Jew, as long as he's standing there, everything else. And he works to denigrate the standing and to undermine him. It's not for a political gain. He starts off with that and says, you know, I'm a Fuzar, I'm a Furad, because he sees that they're divided. And he says, now you're vulnerable because you're not a united people. And Esther recognizes the antidote is Lech Knossos Kol HaYudim. When you gather all the Jews to stand together, you can overcome the enemies. So today they're trying to divide us with these campaigns of delegitimization and divisiveness. And all of those within our community or outside who do this further, who campaign to split the community and to divide people, have to be held to account, because it's a time when we need unity more than ever with the agenda that we just talked about and many more things that we didn't get to. The upcoming visits, the political situation here, you see what's going on in Hungary and in Greece and in Stockholm and in Belgium, and the rise of anti-Semitism in Europe and in France, where the president's constant visit, where people, you know, were really taken aback by the reality on the ground there. This is a time when Jews have to be together. Lech Knossos Kol HaYudim, all of them. We need everybody. We need them to stand together. Whatever views you have that differ or something, you can do that with respect and with responsibility. You can express it. But recognize that what we have in common is more important, because we have people today say, Kol zeh nishavali, all that what Israel does, everything that the Jews do is nothing, as long as you still have the state of Israel standing.
Have a happy Purim. We'll speak Bezrat Hashem 2 weeks from today.
God willing.